People love to talk. In fact, it's been said that the average person says 16,000 words a day. Now, you take that statistic and multiply it times the average lifespan, which is 70. You have the average person saying around 409 million words in their lifetime. Now, part of the issue with this is vocalization is not the only way we talk, is it? Of course, because of the internet and the rise of social media, there is all sorts of platforms for every single person to make their voice heard. And so a study in 2010 found this, that 294 billion emails are sent every single day. 240 million status updates are done every day. And 55 million tweets are tweeted every single day. And so you think about those statistics and the unending chatter that you and I are a part of, and it gives a whole new weight to what Jesus said in Matthew 12:36 when He said that you and I are going to be held accountable for every single one of those words that we say. And so when I think about my words, I like to think about it almost like a product. And one of the things that we know about products is this. Products begin their life in the engineering department. And it's within in the engineering department that they are designed. The concept is developed. And then once it goes from there, it goes to a place called marketing. And one thing that we know about products that are developed, they don't want to go just straight from the engineering department to the shelf. Because no one's going to walk down the cereal aisle and see a thing of cereal in a brown paper bag with Sharpie that says cereal and buy the thing. No one's going to go to a department store and get a cologne or some perfume from a mason jar. Whether we want to admit it or not, whether we like it or not, the reality is still the same. People judge books by their covers. Marketing is crucial to the success of what has been created within the engineering department. And so we know this reality with everything else in the world, but sometimes when it comes to gospel communication, we forget this truth. And so I want you to think about it like this. The truth that you know is beginning in your mind, which we will call the engineering department. These are those things that you know to be true and those things that you believe down at your core. But we just can't let those things fly out and immediately go to the shelf. We need to focus on, at times, how we market those words and those things that we know to be true. And so what I want us to kind of, I guess, to set the stage for the lesson tonight is this, that truth should always supply the content, but love should always supply the package. And so in Ephesians chapter 4, this is what Paul says, that we are called to speak the truth in love. Unfortunately, though, what we have is a bunch of people leaning one way or the other. And guys, even within the church, I have heard, unfortunately, this statement. Well, I'm just a truth person. Or I'm just, you know, a love person. Neither one of those are truly practicing discipleship. God didn't call us to just be a truth person or just be a love person. He called us to both love and truth. And so what we have, because we tend to lean one way or the other, is an opportunity that we have missed out on. See, because when we bring truth without love, it's this. Truth without love is harshness. It gives out a lot of information, but it doesn't give out information in a way that we can actually hear it. But then the flip side is also just as dangerous. Love without truth maybe could be called sentimentality. It makes you feel good about yourself. It maybe affirm you in some way or another, but it keeps you in a constant state of denial about your flaws. And so that's one of the most difficult things for us as believers, isn't it? To go after both at the same time, truth and love. One of the most difficult tasks for us is just that. And so we can't afford to have maybe the torch of truth without the embrace of love or the heat of truth without the warmth of love. To pursue both is, in fact, a singular task. And so I don't know about y'all, but I want to, as best as I can, to try to do everything like my Savior did. And one thing that John 1 makes very clear is how Jesus brought about that truth. And sometimes it's a detail that we subtly kind of skip over, maybe incidentally, when it comes to John 1. But it says this, that when Jesus Christ came to this earth, He came full of grace and truth. And one of the things that we know about lists in the Greek, and anytime you see two things listed within a sentence, it's important to notice what is mentioned first. And you've probably heard this before, of course, with the fruits of the Spirit, love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. You have love mentioned first. That does not necessarily mean that love is more important than the other ones. But what it does mean a lot of times in Greek writing is that whatever is in the front sets the tone for what follows. And so if you think about that with John chapter 1, that Jesus came full of grace and truth, what it's saying is that when Jesus came into people's lives that were broken, you notice a common consistent theme. Jesus always led with grace. And so we must lead with grace. Love and truth, truth and love, never one without the other, never one at the expense of the other. Both are a singular task. And to me, one of the greatest examples of balancing both truth and love is seen here. Let me see if I can get this. There we go. An example of Nathan and David. And what we know, of course, about David is that David was, of course, called the man after God's own heart. And David, like a lot of us who have a relationship with God, we find ourselves doing a lot of things, maybe not the same as David did, but we find ourselves doing the very things at times that God hates. And so David found himself in a place where he didn't need to be, looking in a direction that he didn't need to look. And that's where ultimately began his downfall. And so he was up on a rooftop and he saw this woman named Bathsheba bathing. And he noticed how beautiful she was. And so he actually called her into his place. And he lay down with her that night. And then as we, of course, find out later, Bathsheba let him know, hey, I'm pregnant. And so once David found out that information, he had a choice, right? His choice was, all right, maybe what I can do is just admit that I messed up. I've sinned. I've fallen short. And so, you know, I'm going to go up and admit my faults. Or he could do what a lot of us tend to do. We cover it up because we think that temporary peace is going to be lasting satisfaction, but that temporary peace truly isn't peace at all. It's false satisfaction. And so we find ourselves hurting more than we ever thought we would hurt. And so we live in this place of denial where we're hurting more if we would have just asked for forgiveness or just faced that repentance. And so David finds himself in that spot and he chooses B. And so what he does is this massive cover-up. And so in order to cover up what he had done, he said, listen, I want to bring this guy by the name of Uriah, who is Bathsheba's husband, in. I'm going to bring him in from war, and we're going to let him spend the night with her. And probably what's going to happen is, you know, they're going to think, you know, weeks, months later that the baby is actually his. But Uriah was so loyal to the king, how ironic, that he wouldn't even do it. And so he tried again to do it in maybe in a different way. But still, no success. Uriah was going to be loyal. And so David resorted to something that, you know, it was just hard to even fathom. But oftentimes, sin that is unconfessed will do that to you. And so what David ends up doing is puts Uriah on the very front lines, and Uriah was killed. And so, of course, David thinks that he got away with it. But let's don't lie. I mean, we know he's still hurting, right? We know that he's still experiencing a ton of inner pain. And if you've ever been in one of those spots that you know you've sinned and you've hurt a family or hurt someone else and you're living on edge, at times one of the last things you want to hear is somebody come up to you and tell you what you did wrong, right? I mean, you're already on edge and that's going to just kind of make it even worse. And that's why Nathan is so crucial to this story. See, we don't talk enough about Nathan. In fact, I kind of think Nathan is one of those guys that's somewhat maybe underrated when it comes to biblical status. We think of Nathan, of course, just as Nathan the prophet. And he was. And we know about prophets that a lot of times they would walk long miles to go to different cities or different towns to talk to people and to get them to draw closer to God. And so because he was technically living off the land time and time again, Nathan was more than likely a very manly man. He was a very strong man. But just strength is not going to do it. See, because if you look in the book of 2 Chronicles, we see another side to Nathan. The book of 2 Chronicles talks about how Nathan was actually involved in the selection of the worship music. And so maybe he saw the feel of the community and how people were hurting or they were rejoicing. Nathan knew how to pick the right song for the right moment. But then, of course, we also see later on that Nathan was also involved when baby Solomon was born. He was involved in kind of trying to come up with a name for this little boy. And so we notice that there's also a tender side to Nathan. And see, it's so crucial for us to know this about Nathan because it explains so much. Because we know that Nathan was a guy that was a strong man, but there was also a side to Nathan that was sensitive, that was tender. Strength. Tenderness. Sensitivity. It was needed. So God sends Nathan in to confront David. And what I love about the approach of Nathan is that he led with grace by telling a story. And he didn't try to go nose to nose with David. He just wanted to tell a story. And I don't know if you have noticed this in your own life, but we all connect with stories. In fact, my sophomore year at Faulkner, the campus minister, a guy by the name of Jason Owen, he called me into his office one day and he said, Andrew, I just want to, let you know, buddy, I love you. I was like, well, thanks, man. You didn't have to call me in to tell me that. You just text me, call me. But, hey, that's awesome. I love you, too. He's like, man, and, you know, I appreciate you and everything, but I'm a little concerned about you. He's like, I've just been noticing since your freshman year, you're a little bit different. You're not as involved in the campus ministry stuff like you were before. And also, I've just kind of been picking up on campus. You're kind of hanging out with a few people that I'm just worried about, that are a little toxic. And so, can I tell you something for a second? I'm like, yeah. He said, man, when I was in your shoes, actually, the very place at Faulkner, I went through something very similar. I came on campus super involved. I was committed to the Lord. And then as time got on, I kind of found myself being around a group that I shouldn't be. And man, can I just tell you about the hurt that I went through? I was like, sure. So he began to tell me about all the things that he experienced and all the hurt that he had and still had because of some of those people that he surrounded himself with. He led with grace. He told me a story, and I connected with the grace and I connected with the story. And so Nathan ends up telling this story. He said, I want to tell you a story. There's a man in town that's a very, very poor man. And he just has this one little ewe lamb. And this is really all he has. And so he treats this lamb as if it's his own child. But I also want to tell you that down the street, there's this really, really wealthy man. And this wealthy man has so much stuff, and he has so many crops, and he has so many cattle, and he has a ton of sheep that he can choose from. Well, this really wealthy man found out that he had a friend of his coming into town, and so like most people, they want to throw a meal to celebrate the fact that a friend is visiting them. And so instead of looking out at one of the tons of sheep or cattle that he has to choose from, he goes after this one ewe lamb from this very poor man, takes his lamb, and kills it. And so when David heard this, he was so cut to the heart about what this man had done. In his fury, he said, who is this man? He must die. And so with a deep breath and very measured tones, Nathan said, you are that man. One of the greatest challenges in truth-telling is keeping the focus on the deed and not the confronter's need to be right. Guys, we don't go out and confront to be right. We go out to confront to get people right with God. And because Nathan was so brilliant, and he brought the truth in the right way at the right time for the right reasons, Psalm 51 was written. And it was in Psalm 51 that David confessed and repented of his sins. Truth and love, love and truth, never one without the other, never the embrace of love without the torch of truth, never the heat of truth without the warmth of love. To pursue truth and love is, in fact, a singular task. In fact, some people even believe that David's child that was eventually named Nathan was named after the man that stood in front of him that day and literally risked it all. Ephesians chapter 4, verses 1 through 3, it says this, "I, therefore, a prisoner for the Lord, urge you to walk in a manner worthy of the calling to which you have been called, with all humility and gentleness, with patience, bearing with one another in love, eager to maintain the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace." Then if you skip down, it goes on to say in verses 14 through 16, "So that we may no longer be children tossed to and fro by the waves and carried about by every wind of doctrine, by cunning and craftiness and deceitful schemes, rather speaking the truth in love, we are to grow up in every way into Him who is the head, into Christ, from whom the whole body, joined and held together by every joint with which it is equipped, when each part is working properly, makes the body grow so that it builds itself up in love." And so what if you think about this, what He's calling us to, He's calling us to three different components. And each and every single one of these three components are crucial. Now, I know not everybody may be able to see this, so I'm going to leave it up afterwards so you can see it. But I want to kind of explain it like this. This is what's central to everything. Love. Love is central, all right? But of course, He tells us to what? Speak about that truth in love. Now, I want to go ahead and say this before I put these up here. I Googled lips and mouth, and this truly was one of the best options that I had. And I know it looks like someone had like a lip job done, or it looks like Steve Tyler. But anyway, I know it looks awkward, so I just want to go ahead and mention that. So anyway, all right, so here's the speaking part, all right? So we've got the love, okay, and then we got the speaking. But of course, then there's this. This is the truth, those things that we know. This is what maybe we talk about, what we believe that happens within the engineering department, okay? So we've got the speaking, we've got the truth, and we've got the love. And so what the heart is and the love is always the context, all right? The speaking, that is the conversation, and the truth is always the content. And when I look at this and trying to achieve all three of these at once, I like to call this the Mount Everest of Christianity. That's a tough task. And because here's what tends to happen. We at times lean one way or the other. And because we do that, we do all of our truth or all of our love or none of our speaking at the expense of the other. And so what happens is this, all right? We have a lot of people today that know truth and have a lot of love, but they've lost their voice. And one of the things that we know the Bible says in Romans chapter 10, says, how in the world are people supposed to hear if no one tells them? And then it gives a pretty cool description. It says, how beautiful are the feet of those that bring the gospel of peace and bring glad tidings of good things. How are people supposed to hear if no one tells them? And so sometimes our reasoning is well, like, we're so unwilling to confront because we think, well, it's not my job to judge. No one said you have to judge, okay? But yet we feel like, well, I'm not going to say anything, and we're just going to kind of step back and let things happen. And this goes with a lot of things. We see a lot of sin happening in front of us, but we also see a lot of opportunities to speak truth or to speak love to people, and we pass those opportunities by. And when we don't take advantage of the opportunity to speak life into people, we lose our voice. And sometimes we wonder, why in the world aren't things changing? You know why I really think a lot of things aren't changing? It's because the church is not speaking. And by the way, There is no plan B. Okay? We are the plan. And so we've got the heart and we've got the truth, but the problem is we've lost our voice. But then, of course, we understand that there's those that have, of course, the ability to speak a lot, and they really love, but they're missing a little bit of the content. Now, I wasn't asked to give a lesson on truth, so I'm not. And truth for a lot of people is something that can be very difficult to define. And I will even say, I feel like at times we make truth a little bit more difficult than really it needs to be. Truth is Jesus. Jesus said, I'm the way, I'm the truth, I'm the life. No one comes to the Father but through me. No one experiences truth with who? My words. People experience truth by getting to know Jesus Christ. You want them to follow everything else? Tell them the story of Jesus. You tell them the story of Jesus, they will understand the crucial nature of the commands. Don't lead with the commands. Lead with Jesus. And so if we know the truth, okay, which a lot of us do, but the problem is if we've got the speaking in the heart, but we maybe miss out a little bit on this, we've missed a vital opportunity. And so let's make this simple. Let's just make the truth Jesus. So let's lead about telling the story of Jesus. And the great news about truth is this, is that we don't own truth. Truth owns us. And the reason why that's a big deal is because sometimes we get a little bit upset when we say things like, man, people don't really buy into the ideas that I'm telling. Well, they're not your ideas. You know, we don't set truth apart. It sets us apart. And it's a beautiful thing that we just get to tell the story of Jesus, which is what? Truth. You tell the story of Jesus, people, I'm telling you, are going to buy into the truth. You lead with that. And so a lot of times we have our voice, we've lost maybe, or have our heart, but we've lost the truth. But of course, we also know that there's a large majority that are willing to speak out, and they've got the right content, but they've lost their heart. And let me tell you, if we lose our heart, we will lose our opportunities every single time. In fact, 1 Corinthians 13 says, listen, you can prophesy if you want. You can have all mysteries and understand all knowledge. But if you don't have love, you're a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. If you're not loving, you're noise. So how can we accomplish all three of these? I'm going to try to just break it down real quickly. We have to speak the truth with the goal of restoration. That's really how we accomplish speaking the truth in love. If we come in with the goal to restore, lives are going to be changed. So Galatians chapter 6, a passage that we all know, it says that we are to bear each other's burdens, and when we do that, we will fulfill the law of Christ. But part of what it says is that if you see a brother who is in sin, you who are spiritual, what? Restore him. Okay? Restore him in a spirit of gentleness. Restoration is the key. And one of my favorite pictures of restoration is the story of Ananias and Saul. And if you don't know about Saul, I'll just give you a little bit of background. Saul was this guy that was walking around, riding his chariot around, going up and down the different towns, killing Christians. His goal was to destroy anything that had to do with Christ. And so he had been going around killing a lot of Christians in all sorts of different towns. And he's going down the road to Damascus. And as he's going on his way to kill more Christians, a light comes down from heaven. And when this light comes down from heaven, Saul looks at it and it blinds him. And so Saul goes to Judas's house that's on Straight Street. And then a man by the name of Ananias is called to go to Judas's house on Straight Street to go and meet Saul. Now, when he first realizes that he is going to be standing in front of this guy named Saul, the Bible doesn't say this detail, but it doesn't really have to. He knows about Saul. He knows about Saul. In fact, more than likely, if you look at really the context of where he was versus where we believe Ananias possibly was, it's very likely that Ananias maybe was experiencing some of the repercussions of Saul's killings and persecutions. That Saul could have killed some of Ananias' family, possibly. We don't know. Saul could have killed some of his close friends. We don't know. And so he hears he's about to walk into the room of a guy that has killed some of his family and friends. What a task. And it doesn't just, it's not a task just for a strong man, is it? It's a task for a man that's willing to embrace strength, sensitivity, and tenderness. And so Ananias walks into that room, and one of the most underrated two words in the entire Bible is Ananias walking in and saying this, "Brother Saul." He called him brother. He led with what? Grace. And then what happens next to me is just as fascinating because it's so simple. He lays his hands on him. He facilitates. And God does the healing. He could have got heated, right? He could have got maybe manipulative. He could have got mean. But he instead just decided to do what God has simply but yet powerfully called us to do. Facilitate. And again, I think, you know, we throw out the excuses of, well, you know, if I just knew a little bit more, No, God has called us to be facilitators. I understand we can't all be maybe Jesus's or Paul's, but we can all be Ananias's. We can all be facilitators. And when we do, we can turn those foes into friends. So we speak the truth with the goal of restoration. But here's what we also do. We speak the truth with caution. Because if you go on to read Galatians chapter 6, it says, you know, of course, you who are spiritual, restore him in a spirit of gentleness. But then what does it say next? Lest you be tempted. And this is crucial because sometimes we can be so focused on the other person's deeds and their missteps that we miss out and forget to focus on our own. And again, not that we shouldn't seek to help restore each other. We're not saying don't restore. We're saying don't forget to focus also on you. Because I can't tell you how many times I have seen in ministry, and maybe you've just seen this within the church, that a person is so passionate about making sure this person stops what they're doing, but then you find out maybe days, weeks, months later that they're involved in maybe the same sin or a similar sin. Because they put so much of their focus on what he or she is doing wrong that they let their guard down. Because think about it, that's a wonderful tool of Satan, isn't it? Because you've got this person right here that is extremely maybe strong at the time, and this person over here that's a little bit weak and maybe even living in sin. And so what happens is this person's pouring so much into this other person that if they're not careful, what can be happening is Satan is actually celebrating because there was no growth that was taking place. They literally just switch spots. And so we have to be very cautious as we go out speaking maybe those truths that are true into people's lives to also keep ourselves filled with the Spirit. And I would actually say that maybe a wonderful method for us is just as much energy and time we focus on truth-telling, we need to have some gospel-consuming just to equal it out, okay? So we have to speak the truth with caution, and I want to close with this one. We speak the truth not just with caution, but we speak the truth with love, and here's why. Because love literally transcends everything. And this is with all sorts of things, okay? This is even with your children, that you catch your child doing something that they shouldn't be doing. It can be really easy to get heated instead of holy, and you can lead them even further away. And this goes for the job too. You know, at your work, you know, you could go and find someone involved in a very bad business deal. And again, get heated instead of holy, and you never draw them even closer to the Lord. God has called us to speak the truth in love. Truth and love, love and truth, never one without the other, never the embrace of love without the torch of truth, never the heat of truth without the warmth of love, to pursue both truth and love is, in fact, a singular task. As I close tonight, I want to ask you this question. Are you willing to love? Are you willing to love? And if you're not, please, please stay out of the picture. Love is a non-negotiable. Truth is a non-negotiable. Speaking is a non-negotiable. God cares about the content. God cares about the conversation. And God definitely cares about the context. And of course, maybe tonight there's some of you that find yourself maybe like myself and probably others missing in one area. And maybe you find yourself even recently like, you know, I know the truth and my heart's in the right place, but I'm not saying anything. And sometimes we tend to, those of us that are in that group, tend to excuse ourselves because we still know it and we still love. But still there's no excuse because we're not speaking. And so if that's you, I encourage you to come forward and actually ask prayers for that. Lord, help me to speak. Because how in the world are people going to know unless I tell them? Or maybe what it is tonight for you is that you know the truth now. It's Jesus. And you understand that it's through Him and through His Son, through God's Son, Jesus Christ, that you get that gift of eternal life. And that's why I love the passages in Romans 6 and on, where it gives us the picture of how we, through baptism, are actually joined with Christ. That just as Christ was around this world that was filled with sin, but yet He did not fall victim to that sin, and He went to that tomb and He came out brand new, that we go into a tomb, which is that watery grave of baptism, and we come out brand new. And we experience that truth in the most real way we've ever experienced it. Or maybe you're here tonight, and maybe like a lot of people, your heart is broken because you've spoken a lot of truth, but you've maybe realized, I haven't done it in love. And because you haven't done it in love, you've lost your opportunity. Whatever it is that you have a need of tonight, whether it's prayers for more speaking, maybe it's more prayers for more truth-telling, or maybe it's prayers for more love, whatever it is, please come forward tonight as we stand and we sing the song together.